Chapter 3. Heart. This was my scheme in marrying, had it pleased heaven to prosper my plan. When I was a boy, and came from school and college, I used to see Mr. Bonington, my father-in-law, with his young ones clustering round about him, so happy to be with him, so eager to wait on him, all down on their little knees, round my mother before breakfast or jumping upon his after dinner. It was who should reach his hat, and who should bring his coat, and who should fetch his umbrella, and who should get the last kiss. Touch it. What? Didn't he kiss you? Oh, the hard-hearted old ogre. Milliken. Don't touch it. Don't laugh at Mr. Bonington. He is as good a fellow as ever breathed. Between you and me, as my half-brothers and sisters increased and multiplied year after year, I used to feel rather lonely, rather bowled out, you understand. But I saw them so happy, that I longed to have a home of my own. When my mother proposed Arabella for me, for she and Lady Kickleberry were immense friends at one time, I was glad enough to give up clubs and bachelorhood, and to settle down as a married man. My mother acted for the best. My poor wife's character, my mother used to say, changed after marriage. I was not as happy as I hoped to be, but I tried for it. George, I am not so comfortable now as I might be. A house without a mistress, with two mothers-in-law reigning over it, one worldly and aristocratic, another what you call serious, though she don't mind a rubber of whist. I give you my honor, my mother plays a game at whist, and an uncommonly good game to each woman dragging over a child to her side. Of course such a family cannot be comfortable. Bell rings. There's the first dinner bell. Go and dress, for heaven's sake. Touch it. Why dress? There is no company. Milliken. Why? Ah. Her ladyship likes it, you see. And it costs nothing to humor her. Quick, for she don't like to be kept waiting. Touch it. Horace Milliken. What a pity it is the law declares a widower shall not marry his wife's mother. She would marry you else, she would, on my word. Enter John. John. I have took the captain's things in the blue room, sir.
Excellent gentlemen. John arranges tables, and see,
ha. Mrs. Pryor. I ain't partial to Mrs. Pryor. I think she's an artful old dodger, Mrs. Pryor. I think there's mystery in her unfathomable pockets, and schemes in the folds of her umbrella. But she's Julia's mother, and for the beloved one's sake I am civil to her. Mrs. Pryor.
Thank you, Charles, to the page, who has been seen to let her in at the garden gate.
I am so much obliged to you. Good afternoon, Mr. Howell. Is my daughter are the darling children well? Oh, I am quite tired and weary. Three horrid omnibuses were full, and I have had to walk the whole weary long way. Ah, times are changed with me, Mr. Howell. Once when I was young and strong, I had my husband's carriage to ride in.
John, aside.
His carriage. His coal wagon. I know well enough who old Pryor was. A merchant? Yes, a pretty merchant. Kept a lodging house, share in a barge, touting for orders, and at last a snug little place in the Gazette. Mrs. Pryor. How is your cough, Mr. Howell? I have brought you some lozenges for it.
Takes numberless articles from her pocket.
And if you would take them of a night and morning, oh, indeed, you would get better. The late Sir Henry Alford recommended them to Mr. Pryor. He was his late Majesty's physician and ours. You know we have seen happier times, Mr. Howell. Oh, I am quite tired and faint. John. Will you take anything before the schoolroom tea, ma'am? You will stop to tea, I hope, with Miss Pryor and our young folks? Mrs. Pryor. Thank you. A little glass of wine, when one is so faint, a little crumb of biscuit, when one is so old and tired. I have not been accustomed to want, you know, and in my poor dear Mr. Pryor's time, John. I'll fetch some wine, ma'am.
Exit to the dining room.
Mrs. Pryor. Bless the man, how abrupt he is in his manner. He quite shocks a poor lady who has been used to better days. What's here? Invitations, ho,
Bills for Lady Kickleberry. They are not paid. Where is Mr. M going to dine, I wonder? Captain and Mrs. Hopkinson, Sir John and Lady Tomkinson, request the pleasure. Request the pleasure. Of course they do. They are always asking Mr. M to dinner. They have daughters to marry, and Mr. M is a widower with 3,000 a year, every shilling of it. I must tell Lady Kickleberry. He must never go to these places, never, never mustn't be allowed. While talking, she opens all the letters on the table, rummages the portfolio and writing box, looks at cards on mantelpiece, work in work basket, tries tea box, and shows the greatest activity and curiosity. Re-enter John, bearing a tray with cakes, a decanter, and see, thank you, Mr. Howell. Oh, dear me, not so much as that. Half a glass, and one biscuit please. What elegant sherry. Sips a little, and puts down glass on tray. Do you know, I remember in better days, Mr. Howell, when my poor dear husband, John, beg your pardon. There's Milliken's bell, going like mad. Exit John. Mrs. Pryor. What an abrupt person. Oh, but it's comfortable, this wine is. And I think how my poor Charlotte would like a little, she's so weak, and ordered wine by the medical man. And when dear Adolphus comes home from Christ's hospital, quite tired, poor boy, and hungry, wouldn't a bit of nice cake do him good? Adolphus is so fond of plum cake, the darling child. And so is Frederick, little saucy rogue. And I'll give them my peace, and keep my glass of wine for my dear delicate angel Shaddy. Takes bottle and paper out of her pocket, cuts off a great slice of cake, and pours wine from wine glass and decanter into bottle. Enter Paige. Paige. Master George and Miss Bella is going to have their teas down here with Miss Pryor, Mrs. Pryor, and she's up in the schoolroom, and my lady says you may stay to tea. Mrs. Pryor. Thank you, Charles. How tall you grow. Those trousers would fit my darling Frederick to a nicety. Thank you, Charles. I know the way to the nursery. Exit Mrs. P. Paige. Know the way. I believe she do know the way. Been a having cake and wine. Howell always gives her cake and wine, jolly cake, ain't it? And wine, oh, my. Re-enter John. John. You young gormandizing cormorant. What? 5 meals a day ain't enough for you. What? Beer ain't good enough for you, hey?
Pulls boy's ears.
Paige, crying, oh, do O-N apostrophe T, Mr. Howell. I only took half a glass, upon my honor. John. You're a honor, you lying young vagabond. I wonder the ground don't open and swallow you. Half a glass.
Holds up the decanter.
You've took half a bottle, you young Ananias. Mark this, sir. When I was a boy on my promotion, a child kindly took in from charity school, a orphan in buttons like you, I never lied. No, nor never stole, and you've done both, you little scoundrel. Don't tell me, sir. There's plums on your coat, crumbs on your cheek, and you smell sherry, sir. I ain't time to whop you now, but come to my pantry tonight after you've took the tray down. Come without your jacket on, sir, and then I'll teach you what it is to lie and steal. There's the outer bell. Scud, you vagabond. Enter Lady K. Lady K. What was that noise, pray? John. A difference between me and young Paige, my lady. I was instructing him to keep his hands from picking and stealing. I was learning him his lesson, my lady, and he was a-crying it out. Lady K. It seems to me you are most unkind to that boy, Howell. He is my boy, sir. He comes from my estate. I will not have him ill-used. I think you presume on your long services. I shall speak to my son-in-law about you.
S, my lady. No, my lady. Very good, my lady. John has answered each sentence as she is speaking, and exit gravely bowing.
That man must quit the house. Horace says he can't do without him, but he must do without him. My poor dear Arabella was fond of him, but he presumes on that defunct angel's partiality.
Horace says this person keeps all his accounts, sorts all his letters, manages all his affairs, may be trusted with untold gold, and rescued little George out of the fire. Now I have come to live with my son-in-law, I will keep his accounts, sort his letters, and take charge of his money. And if little Georgie gets into the grate, I will take him out of the fire. What is here? Invitation from Captain and Mrs. Hopkinson. Invitation from Sir John and Lady Tomkinson, who don't even ask me. Monstrous, he never shall go, he shall not go.
Mrs. Pryor has re-entered. She drops a very low curtsy to Lady K, as the latter, perceiving her, lays the cards down.
Mrs. Pryor. Ah, dear madam. How kind your ladyship's message was to the poor lonely widow woman. Oh, how thoughtful it was of your ladyship to ask me to stay to tea. Lady K with your daughter and the children? Indeed, my good Mrs. Pryor, you are very welcome.
Mrs. Pryor. Ah, but isn't it a cause of thankfulness to be made welcome? Oughtn't I to be grateful for these blessings?
Yes, I say blessings. And I am, Lady Kickleberry to the mother of that angel who is gone,
points to the picture.
It was your sainted daughter left my child to the care of Mr. Milliken, and you, who are now his guardian angel, I may say.
You are, Lady Kickleberry, you are.
I say to my girl, Julia, Lady Kickleberry is Mr. Milliken's guardian angel, is your guardian angel, for without you could she keep her place as governess to these darling children? It would tear her heart in two to leave them, and yet she would be forced to do so. You know that someone, shall I hesitate to say whom I mean, that Mr. Milliken's mother, excellent lady though she is, does not love my child, because you love her. You do love her, Lady Kickleberry, and oh, a mother's fond heart pays you back. But for you, my poor Julia must go, and leave the children whom a dying angel confided to her.
Lady Kago.
No, never. Not whilst I am in this house, Mrs. Pryor. Your daughter is a well-behaved young woman. You have confided to me her long engagement to Lieutenant Wadayu Callum, in the Indian service. As he has been very, very good to my grandchildren, she brought them over from Naples, when my angel of Anne Arabella died there, and I will protect Miss Pryor.
Mrs. Pryor.
Bless you, noble, admirable woman. Don't take it away.
I will kiss your dear, generous hand.
Take a mother's, a widow's blessings, Lady Kickleberry, the blessings of one who has known misfortune and seen better days, and thanks heaven, yes, heaven, for the protectors as he has found.
Lady K. You said you had several children, I think, my good Mrs. Pryor?
Mrs. Pryor. Three boys, one, my eldest blessing, is in a wine merchant's office, if Mr. Milliken would but give him an order from this house.
An order from Lady Kickleberry's son-in-law.
Lady K. It shall be done, my good Pryor, we will see.
Mrs. Pryor.
Another, Adolphus, dear fellow, is in Christ's hospital. It was dear, good Mr. Milliken's nomination.
Frederick is at Merchant Taylor's.
My darling Julia pays his schooling. Besides, I have two girls, Amelia, quite a little toddles, just the size, though not so beautiful, but in a mother's eyes all children are lovely, dear Lady Kickleberry, just the size of your dear granddaughter, whose clothes would fit her, I am sure. And my second, Charlotte, a girl as tall as your ladyship, though not with so fine a figure.
H, no, Shaddy. I say to her, you are as tall as our dear patroness, Lady Kickleberry, whom you long so to see, but you have not got her ladyship's carriage and figure, child.
Five children have I, left fatherless and penniless by my poor dear husband, but heaven takes care of the widow and orphan, madam, and heaven's best creatures feed them.
You know whom I mean.
Lady K, should you not like, would you object to take a frock, or two of little Arabella's to your child?
And if Pinhorn, my maid, will let me, Mrs. Pryor, I will see, if I cannot find something against winter for your second daughter, as you say we are of a size.
Mrs. Pryor.
the widows and orphans' blessings upon you. I said my Charlotte was as tall, but I never said as he had such a figure as yours who has. Charles announces, Charles. Mrs. Bonington. Enter Mrs. Bonington.
Mrs. B. How do you do, Lady Kickleberry?
Lady K. My dear Mrs. Bonington.
And you come to dinner, of course?
Mrs. B. To dine with my own son, I may take the liberty.
How are my grandchildren, my darling little Emily? Is she well, Mrs. Pryor?
Lady K. Aside.
Emily? Why does she not call the child by her blessed mother's name of Arabella?
To Mrs.
B. Arabella's quite well, Mrs. Bonington.
Mr. Squilling said it was nothing, only her grandmama Bonington spoiling her, as usual.
Mr. Bonington and all your numerous young folk are well, I hope?
Mrs. B. My family are all in perfect health, I thank you.
Is Horace come home from the city?
Lady K. Goodness. There's the dinner bell, I must run to dress.
Mrs. Pryor. Shall I come with you, dear Lady Kickleberry?
Lady K. Not for worlds, my good Mrs. Pryor.
Exit Lady K.
Mrs. Pryor. How do you do, my dear madam? Is dear Mr. Bonington quite well?
What a sweet, sweet sermon he gave us last Sunday.
I often say to my girl, I must not go to hear Mr. Bonington. I really must not. He makes me cry so.
Oh, he is a great and gifted man, and shall I not have one glimpse of him?
Mrs. B. Saturday evening, my good Mrs. Pryor. Don't you know that my husband never goes out on Saturday, having his sermon to compose?
Mrs. P. Oh, those dear, dear sermons.
Do you know, madam, that my little Adolphus, for whom your son's bounty procured his place at Christ's Hospital, was very much touched indeed, the dear child, with Mr. Bonington's discourse last Sunday 3 weeks, and refused to play marbles afterwards at school? The wicked naughty boys beat the poor child, but Adolphus has his consolation.
Is Master Edward well, ma'am, and Master Robert, and Master Frederick, and dear little funny Master William?
Mrs. B. Thank you, Mrs. Pryor. You have a good heart, indeed.
Mrs. P. Ah, what blessings those dears are to you.
I wish your dearest little grandson.
Gutenberg edition.
End of chapter.